Thank you very much. I'm really thrilled to be here. This is my first time at Chautauqua, so I'm enjoying myself. It's quite a wonderful place, and thanks so many of you for being here this afternoon to hear a little bit about the museum and about our current special exhibition, A Blessing to One Another, Pope John Paul II and the Jewish People. I do want to thank the Everett Center for having me. I also want to thank them for having the display boards that are downstairs about the exhibition, so you can take another look at those after I've left today, and hopefully some of you will also be able to come and visit at the museum. Except for Jackie and Roger, has anybody been to the Maltz Museum who's in this room? We do have a number of people who've been there. Great. Clevelanders or non-Clevelanders? Clevelanders, most of you? Yeah. I'm really glad to have some people here who have experienced our museum. But for those of you who have not been at the museum, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the museum itself, the museum's history, and my involvement, and then we'll talk more about the Pope exhibition. The Museum of Jewish Heritage, the Maltz Museum of Jewish Heritage, began with a very different idea. And Roger Klein may know even a little bit more about this than I do. The museum was an idea that came up at the Temple Tiferet Israel, where Roger is a rabbi. And at one point, probably somewhere around the early part of 2000 or 2001, the administration at the temple thought they wanted to find a new way of displaying the beautiful collection, or at least a portion of the beautiful collection of Judaic objects that the temple owns. The Temple Tiferet Israel, if you haven't been there as well to see their collection or their collection in our museum, they're one of the premier collectors of Judaic objects in the country. They have a spectacular collection, and they continue to collect. And they had a display of those objects in the original temple, which is down closer to downtown Cleveland, but they were looking for something that would enhance that collection on the east side of the city, out in Beechwood, where the suburban branch of the temple is. And they approached one of their congregants, Milton Maltz, and asked him if he would be interested in helping them think about an idea for a museum. And that was partially because Mr. Maltz had recently become involved in a new project that he was working on called the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. And he has a wonderful curiosity about such places. And Mr. and Mrs. Maltz thought about that a little bit, and they thought about this idea of a new exhibit space, a new gallery space for the Judaic objects owned by the temple. And, of course, as Mr. Maltz often does, he said, "I have a bigger idea," which is kind of the wonderful thing about him, one of the wonderful things about him. And his bigger idea was a museum that would tell the story of the Jewish people of the city of Cleveland. That would be a place where all of the community could come to learn about their past, to learn about their present, to think about their future. It would certainly include a beautiful new gallery for temple objects, but it would be a much larger project. And that kind of got a lot of people inspired to think about that opportunity, and they did move forward in that direction. So it's really been since, it's probably been 12 years since the idea to build this museum began to be floated in our community. I was appointed director just about a month ago, but as I was introduced, I've been at the museum since January of 2005, which is before it opened. When I arrived there, which was a very snowy day at the end of January in 2005, I came to work for the first day of my job at a construction site. It was full of workmen. It was full of big empty spaces. We had some floor plans. We had some drawings of what we thought, everybody thought the galleries were going to look like. But it was a really exciting opportunity, and that was really the number one reason I was interested in working at the museum, is it was something new. It was something that we had not done before. We hadn't made any mistakes yet. And that was really enticing, to come to a place that, what are we going to do here? How are we going to interpret this place? How are we going to interest people in coming to visit us? What sorts of exhibitions are we going to have? It was very exciting to start a place from the beginning. So when I arrived in the snow that day to find workmen and guys on ladders, and there were places in the building we weren't able to go because they were working on them, and you had to have a hard hat if you went to look at the space. It was a very, very, very exciting time. And a few of us, there are a couple of staffers still there that are from that period. And it's, you know, we hold the corporate history, you know, the institutional history of our museum. It makes you feel kind of old. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to have been there from the very beginning. For 7 years, I was the Director of Education and Public Programs. My very happy task in that job was to organize and develop the Adult Interpretive Series. We do quite a number of programs of lectures and films. And last night, I had music. Last night, we had music of Jewish composers of the American Songbook. So we have lots of different kinds of things that happen at the museum. And in the role of Director of Education and Public Programs, I also oversee all of our youth, family, school, and teacher initiatives at the museum, and that is quite a large variety of things that we do to serve young people there. So we did open in October of 2005, and we are, of course, nearing our 7th anniversary. The Maltz Museum is a partnership project with the Maltz Family Foundation, the Jewish Federation of Cleveland, the Temple Tiferet Israel, who is our neighbor and is right next door to us, and many of the objects that reflect the Jewish history of Cleveland come from our relationship with our research partner, the Western Reserve Historical Society, another wonderful museum. If you're in Cleveland or you are visiting Cleveland, they have a wonderful collection of objects there, and most of the Jewish archives, which is quite extensive, is not on display regularly at Western Reserve. So the Maltz Museum was a wonderful opportunity to open that collection and see many of those objects on display all of the time. The museum really did open with a very simple mission, and our goal was to build those bridges of tolerance and understanding by sharing the Jewish experience through the lens of the American story, the American history of the Jewish people. It's a very lively community space. It attracts students, adults, groups from the community, from all around the country, and actually from all around the world. Since we opened, and we're nearly 7 years ago, over 200,000 people have visited the museum. Actually, it's closer to 207,000 people, and we're very, very happy about that. And of those 207,000 people, 55,000 of them are school children. So we have very healthy visitation from schools throughout our community. And just like the general population of the city of Cleveland and the suburbs in which we live, more people come to the Maltz Museum who are not Jewish than are Jewish. So we're always looking for ways to engage our audience and engage the diversity of our audience. Since we opened with our mission of building those bridges of tolerance and understanding, we have really come to embrace a vision of our role as a museum in dialogue about diversity and tolerance. That has become a leading part of how we think about what we do there, the exhibitions we select, the programs that we develop. What happens with any new place? You think you know what it's about. You know, we had all those floor plans and we had all those drawings and there was a narrative that had been created for the museum. You think you know what the place is going to be, and you think you know how people are going to interact with it. But it's not until you come to tell us what it really is do we begin to understand the role that the museum plays in the community. And what happened in our museum with the many, many visitors that we have is people would go through the exhibitions, and they would say, well, you know, I'm not Jewish, but this story is very familiar to me. This is very similar to the story of my community, whether that community is the Irish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood or the Croatians or the Russians or the Latin Americans who have come to Cleveland. And even African Americans said, you know, this reminds me a lot of when my family migrated from the South to the North during the Great Migration post-Civil War. This sounds like the story of my family. I understand what I'm seeing here through the lens of my own experience. And we began to realize that the story that we were telling about the Jewish people in the city of Cleveland was really a template for the story of all people who feel marginalized, left out, and in some way having to struggle with achieving the American goal of equality and freedom. And that's become a huge part of the way we think about the things that we do at the Maltz Museum. And we do these things in three spaces in the museum. If you have not been there, there are three gallery spaces, and you really ought to come. It's a spectacularly beautiful place. What a lot of people respond to is you can't really see it from the street. It's kind of down off the street. And we're in a busy intersection, so it's very quiet down below the street. And many people say, well, you know, what's it doing down there? You know, why can't I see it? Why is it down there? And I talked to the architect, Paul Westlake, when we first opened the building, and Paul said to me, well, I wanted the building to look like something that had been in our community forever, but we had recently excavated it. We had recently found it again. So the history of our community has always been there, but the museum was an opportunity to rediscover that. And within that building are three spaces where we tell our story. The American Story Gallery tells the story of the Jewish people of the city of Cleveland, mostly from the time of the late 19th, early 20th century. But it does go back to the very, very first settlers who came to Cleveland, which was a little earlier than that, in the 1840s, when there was not very much in Cleveland. But there was a little band of Jews who came from Unzleben, Bavaria. One of their landsmen had already was in Cleveland. Said, okay, this looks like a good place. Why don't we try this? And they were coming to the most modern place on earth, America, in 1847, the most modern place on earth. And it was a swamp. There were very few people there. But this was the great land, and this particular gentleman decided that this would be the place. So he sent for the rest of the community, and 17 settlers came over, and they founded the Jewish community in the city of Cleveland. And we still have descendants of those families in our community who are still very, very active. So that first part of the exhibition in the American Story Gallery tells that story of how people came to Cleveland, what happened when they settled, the kind of neighborhoods they created, the kind of obstacles they faced and overcame, and how they've created a very vibrant and dynamic community, which we certainly are today. We also have, of course, the Temple Tiferet Israel Gallery, which does house about 250 of the most beautiful objects, Judaic objects and worship objects that I have ever seen. It's a tremendous collection, from antiquities all the way up to contemporary versions of many of these objects. So it's a wonderful place to come and learn about or study again or be reintroduced to Jewish heritage and Jewish religious tradition. And then our special exhibition gallery, and we're going to talk a little bit more and learn a little bit more about what's in there right now, but our special exhibition gallery is about 4,000 square feet. It's really pretty big, and it doesn't have any obstructions. There's no posts, no pillars, which is why a lot of people who come to work on our exhibitions really love it. And that's the place where we host special exhibitions, things that are there for just a brief amount of time. And we've had quite a number of special exhibitions in there. Right now, of course, we are housing A Blessing to One Another, Pope John Paul II and the Jewish People. But we've also had exhibitions as different as Deadly Medicine, Creating the Master Race, which came to us from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. We also had a show called Zap Pow Bam, the Superhero in the Golden Age of Comic Books, because everybody knows where Superman was born, right? Where was Superman born?
In Cleveland.
And he's Jewish. We all know this. Superman was created, of course, by two high school students at the Glenville High School in Cleveland, Ohio, in the pre-war years during the Depression. And, of course, he's from Cleveland, and, of course, he's a nice Jewish boy. So we're very, very happy to have him. And you go to our museum, you'll see Superman all the time. But we had a special exhibition specifically on the superhero in the Golden Age of comic books, which was quite, quite fun. We also housed, for a while, an exhibition called The Enemy Within, Terror in America, 1776 to the Present. And that came to us from our sister institution from the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. And in this fall, starting in the late portion of October and running through the early part of January of 2013, we will have an exhibition called Israeli Art and Culture, Bezalel on Tour, which will feature art, student art from the famed Bezalel Academy of Art and Design in Israel. So it is really going to be a chance for everyone to see a different side, see that very contemporary, modern side to the state of Israel. So many of our, certainly our non-Jewish friends, only know about Israel from what they see in the news, and that paints a very one-sided picture of the contemporary, vibrant land of Israel, of contemporary art, of technological advancement, of a wonderful place that is very different than is often portrayed. So that will certainly be part of that exhibition. So all of our galleries are always filled with photographs, with artifacts, with objects, with films, with interactives for people to play with. And we really do create an immersive experience for our visitors. The special exhibitions certainly help give us that chance to expand our audience and to entice people or groups who may not have been to the museum before or have not considered coming because they might not have thought that this was a place for them. All of these exhibitions have really done wonders to help people that may not think about the museum come. And certainly something like the collection we have right now is a real attraction for individuals in our community who might not have thought that there was something for them in a Jewish museum. And we're beginning to see now, in moving on to 7 years, that the larger population of our city is beginning to understand that we do reflect a story of what it means to be on the outside looking in, what it means to be dedicated to our relationships to one another, and how we go about that, and our responsibility to each other, which is certainly a tenet of Judaism and a tenet of most religions. Our responsibility to care for one another, to understand one another, and to live together in peace. Certainly this exhibition that we have right now does that. And we also try to encourage people to come more than once by all our series of interpretive programs, lectures and films and panels and music and theater and all those sorts of things that provide lots of points of entry. And that was a big part of what I've been doing there for quite a long time, and it's kind of fun to think about the museum in a little bit different way now. So what I find with those programs, the interpretation programs that we do, just like those of you who visit Chautauqua, and just like those of you who are here, of course, at the Everett Center, our visitors have a very lively curiosity and a love of learning, and we hope we're able to fulfill that for them. So we're going to talk. I'm going to give you a little introduction to A Blessing to One Another, this new exhibition that we have, and then we're going to see a little film of it that I think will help you understand what it might be like. This current exhibition was created and produced by Xavier University and the Hillel Jewish Center. Both of those are located in Cincinnati. And it premiered at the university in 2005. And really, this exhibition being at the Maltz Museum is kind of a blessing itself. Because way back in 2008, I went back and looked at my files to see when we had started talking about this. Back in 2008, we began a discussion about hosting this exhibition. And I think all of you remember 2008 and the fall of 2008. And we just couldn't put the pieces together to get this exhibition to come to Cleveland in the early days that it was starting to tour. So, you know, we it kind of went to the back of the files and we moved on with some other things. But earlier this past spring, we got a call at the museum from Abe Foxman, from the ADL, the leader of the ADL. And Abe suggested that the final slot in the exhibition's long tour, because it has been to many institutions, and you told me you had seen it. It has been out touring many different places since 2008, or even maybe a little bit earlier. Abe said the last slot in the tour schedule has become available. Would you like to have this exhibition at the Maltz Museum? Well, usually it takes us 8 months, a year, you know, to think about having an exhibition come and try to put together the funding mechanisms for that and the partnerships in the community to help make sure that we have audience attendance and all that. We had about, I think it was about 6 or 7 weeks. And then it was going to arrive. So we really jumped at the chance to have this exhibition. It was something that was so right for our museum. An exhibition that talks about the life, the very unusual and unique life of a very special person, the rock star of popes, as we can call him around the museum, Pope John Paul II. And his relationship, looking at a lot of his career and his life through his relationship and his lifelong relationship with the Jewish people. So we did get a chance to have this exhibition, and we put it together, the community sponsorships and all the rest of the pieces, very, very quickly. So it really is that extraordinary look at the life of this particular man, Pope John Paul II, from his childhood in early or in pre-war Poland to his inspirational papacy and his legacy of interfaith understanding. So we're going to see a little short film about it. It's not the same as coming to the museum. So I hope this is a teaser and that you'll run right down. You know, it's really easy to get to Cleveland from here. The museum, the exhibition is coming on to its final weeks. It will close on August 5th. So we really are in the last few weeks. But we're going to see a 12-minute film that will walk you through a portion of that exhibition, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more. Can we dim the lights a little bit so they can give it a look? That's not my movie. Technical issues, always.
Paul II and the Jewish People is a unique exhibit that seeks to commemorate, educate, and inspire. Visitors are immersed in a multimedia experience that tells the story of Pope John Paul II's lifelong relationship with the Jewish people, the title being drawn from a letter written by the Pope on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. As Christians and Jews following the example of the faith of Abraham, we are called to be a blessing to the world. This is the common task awaiting us. It is therefore necessary for us, Christians and Jews, to be first a blessing to one another. In the first of the four sections, the childhood of Karol Wojtyła is featured, covering the period from 1920 to 1938. The second section describes the war years he spent in Krakow from 1939 to 1945. The third recounts his years as a young priest, archbishop, and cardinal in Krakow from 1946 to 1978. The final section celebrates the papacy of John Paul II from 1978 to 2005. One of the unique aspects of the exhibit is its construction. Rather than using blank walls on which to mount various items, the back walls have been designed to be an integral part of the experience. Here, we see the town square of Wadowice, Poland, a small town where Karol Wojtyła grew up. The background image is taken from a 1920s hand-tinted postcard and is enlarged to 8 by 20 feet. On this background are placed pictures, text panels, papal quotations, video monitors, and artifacts. The effect is stunning. And when sounds such as Polish music and the bells from the actual church in Wadowice are added, the visitor is drawn into a simulation of the world of Wadowice in the 1920s. Wadowice was different from other Polish towns during the 20s and 30s in that relations between the Catholic majority and the Jewish minority were not characterized by anti-Semitism. A central theme of the exhibit is that these early years instilled in young Karol Wojtyła an attitude of respect, dialogue, and friendship with the Jewish people. This attitude eventually extended toward people of all different faiths during his subsequent ministry as Pope. Karol counted many Jews among his schoolmates and friends. One classmate, Jerzy Kluger, son of a prominent family and one of the few Jews of Wadowice to survive the Holocaust, remained a friend for life. Both good athletes, the two boys shared a love of sports, especially soccer. Karol, known as Lolek to his friends, frequently played goalie for the Jewish team. Karol was a brilliant student who also distinguished himself as an orator and actor and served as high school valedictorian. The exhibit also describes the rich and diverse religious life of Wadowice, the church where Karol Wojtyła was baptized and confirmed, the religious life of the Jews of Wadowice. A number of artifacts from Wadowice are included. Here, a model of the synagogue and a Torah scroll. Video monitors are strategically placed that show interviews with people with whom Karol Wojtyła grew up and those who knew him at various stages of his life. The interviews were done specifically for this exhibit. The second section, The War Years, begins with September 1, 1939, when Germany invaded Poland. This event marked a dramatic change for Karol Wojtyła, who had just entered university in Krakow. Life for all Poles, particularly the Jewish population, would never be the same. Here, the exhibit features a reconstruction of the gate to the Krakow ghetto and artifacts from Auschwitz, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, and private donors who have generously lent these objects for exhibition. The papal household is one of more than 20 lending institutions and individual donors that have contributed materials. In this section, we see the horrors of the Nazi madness and genocide. It is a brief but powerful and moving experience, drawing visitors into the world that transformed Karol Wojtyła's life and set him on the road to priesthood. In addition to pictures, videos, and artifacts, this section features a memorial panel dedicated to the Jews of Wadowice who were killed in the death camps. Among those killed was the family of Jerzy Kluger. The third section introduces the world of Karol Wojtyła as a priest, archbishop, and cardinal in Krakow. These were also difficult years because the nightmare of the Nazi occupation was followed by the Soviet occupation of Poland under the leadership of Joseph Stalin. Here, as throughout the exhibit, the parallel and intersecting stories of the man who had become Pope and the Jewish people are told. During this period, Karol Wojtyła resisted the growing anti-Semitism in Krakow by maintaining relationships with the Jewish community, even visiting the Remus Synagogue in 1969. The section features artifacts from his years as archbishop and cardinal, including his cardinal's biretta, handwritten manuscript pages, and a 16th century Polish Bible. The section also focuses upon the Second Vatican Council, which began in 1962. Of particular interest is Nostra Aetate, the document that marks the beginning of the process of the Catholic Church redefining its relationship to the other religions, in particular the Jewish faith. It was also during the Second Vatican Council that then Archbishop Wojtyła and Jerzy Kluger reunited after not having seen each other since 1938. This friendship, which began in Wadowice and was renewed in Rome, would continue throughout his papacy up until his death. In many ways, the friendship symbolizes the story this exhibit tells. The final section draws visitors into the remarkable papacy of John Paul II. From his first private audience, which was not with a cardinal or head of state, but with his Jewish friend Jerzy Kluger, through his historic visit to Poland in 1979, which unleashed the spiritual and political forces that ultimately brought down the communist regime in Poland, to his historic 1986 visit to the Great Synagogue of Rome, making him the first pope in 2,000 years to visit a synagogue, and to his commitment to establish diplomatic relations with Israel. The exhibit concludes with John Paul II's visit to the Holy Land in the year 2000. Through videos, artifacts, and panels that are the largest of the exhibit, the visitor experiences the Holy Land through the eyes and words of the Pope, following his steps from Mount Nebo to Yad Vashem, and finally to the Western Wall. This section seeks to inspire visitors to take into their hearts and lives the virtues of openness, respect, and dialogue that characterized not just the papacy of John Paul II, but his entire life. The final panel is the famous picture of the Pope placing his prayer in the Western Wall. Visitors are invited to write their own personal prayer, which they then insert into a 20-foot replica of the Western Wall. Without being read, these will be hand-carried to Jerusalem and placed in the actual Western Wall. As an exhibit, A Blessing to One Another immerses visitors in an unsettling, yet beautiful and inspiring world, as seen through the extraordinary life of Pope John Paul II. People come away with knowledge of the lessons he learned, important lessons of history, and they are inspired to incorporate these lessons and values in their own lives.
What a wonderful memorial to our dear Polish Pope. I only wish he could see this. He would love it very, very.
So I think you can see this is a very special exhibition. It really does tell a unique story, something that very few of us have seen before, because it really does depict the Pope as a human being, as someone who grew up in a small town, who had relationships with the people in his town, who had friendships, who was an actor. I love that part. There are lots of pictures of him in plays. And some of you can enlighten us on that, but there seems to be a real relationship between actors and religious. You know, I've met rabbis and priests and, you know, other religious, and many of them were actors at one time in their youth. There's something about getting up in front of people that they seem to enjoy. So it's a truly exceptional exhibition, and it really does reflect the Malz Museum's dedication to interfaith dialogue and to understanding. What was so spectacular about this and why we wanted it, and really when we just couldn't get it together a number of years ago, you know, we were saddened about that, but the exhibition then had filled all of its slots, and we were so excited to get it back because it really does reflect that kind of thematic and that kind of mission that we do have to draw people together. And it certainly is one of the very few exhibitions, or maybe the only exhibition I know of, that connects the Catholic faith to the Jewish tradition and to Jewish values and into relationships between Catholics and Jews, which, as we all know, have not been great for all of history. So to have something that begins to think about that and give us an opportunity to look at it is very, very special. As you can see from watching this film, it really does paint a picture of life as well in the small towns of Poland in the years before World War II, places where the relationships between Jews and Catholics were cordial or perhaps even friendly, as they seem to have been in Wadowice, where Catholic children and Jewish children played together, where they developed friendships, where they learn from one another, and this life, of course, was abruptly cut short by Nazi occupation. And this very insightful look at how one individual, this particular man, grew up to be the Pope. But it really is a story of an insightful look at how one individual responded to the experiences of his youth and the horrors of war and how those experiences affected his life's calling. And I think there is that same story for many who did not become the Pope, but who have a story like that to tell about the things that happened to us in our past and how we are affected by tragedy, how we are affected by the good and the bad that happened to us, and how that affects what we do with the rest of our lives. What we're finding with this particular exhibition is our visitors are expressing a newfound understanding of Pope John Paul's lifelong relationship with the Jewish people, that he had a very good friend in Jerzy Kluger, that they were separated, of course, by the war, that Jerzy was the only survivor of his family during the Holocaust, and that they reunited as the Pope was beginning to be recognized in Catholic leadership. They found one another again, and they remained lifelong friends. I was fascinated when I saw this exhibition that his first audience as Pope was with Jerzy Kluger and his family. And I just thought, that's astounding. That really is. And I don't think it was so much that this was his friend. And as you see the story of this man, the familial relationships, the relationships that he has with people were so important to him that the first one he wanted to share that day with was his friend. That his friend is Jewish is beyond extraordinary. But if his friend had not been Jewish, I have a feeling he would have met with whoever it was first. There seems to be that kind of humanity in this particular man. So we see that, our visitors are thinking about that lifelong relationship with the Jewish people, the personal commitment to that friendship that played out on the world stage. And certainly through his visitations to synagogues, he visited many when he was cardinal and certainly as Pope, and his support for Israel, and the culmination with that historic visit to Jerusalem, to Israel in 2000, where he visited Yad Vashem, where he visited the wall, where he placed his prayer in the wall. And those were very, very special opportunities for Catholics and Jews to consider the long-term relationship that we have had and to think about forging better relationships. So it's been a truly amazing experience to have this exhibition here. And we try to interpret these exhibitions and find ways for many different people to come to the museum and find a way in. And we've had a whole series of public programs around this exhibition. We're coming to the end. It's going to close on August 5th. But among the things that we had to interpret this was a panel discussion about the resurgence of Jewish culture in Poland. Yes, there are Jews in Poland. There are certainly not anywhere near as many as there were pre-war. But the Jewish influence and Jewish culture, certainly, Jewish religion is growing, Jewish faith traditions are growing, but Jewish culture is really growing in Poland. I was fascinated to find that the largest Jewish cultural festivals in the world are in Poland. Massive cultural festivals with Jewish klezmer music and, Yiddish theater and all this crazy stuff going on. And they're in Poland, That just seemed like an amazing thing to me. And so we did have a panel discussion about this and, what's going on? Why is Poland seem to see so much of this new infusion of Jewish culture? We also had a film that I managed to locate. It's called I Am Joseph, Your Brother. It's kind of obscure, but if you're interested in it, you might be able to find it if you look online. I Am Joseph, Your Brother explores the changes that have occurred in the relationship between Judaism and Catholicism and the State of Israel since Vatican II. It's a very, very interesting documentary. We also had a panel discussion with a number of Cleveland leaders who had an opportunity to meet the Pope, and that was a very special evening. All three of the members on that panel had more than one audience, more than one visitation with the Pope, and they were a combination of Jews and Catholics on that panel, and it was very interesting to hear their personal feelings about this particular man. And just last Sunday, we had a family day featuring Polish dancing, which was really kind of fun. So we had Polish dancers in the lobby of the museum. I did bring with me a couple of things that you might want to take away. There's a little card like this. We call this a rack card because it fits in, tourist racks, that just has the basic information. And I also did bring you our current newsletter, most of our programming that's in here is finished now, but you'll see all the things that we do at the museum. You're welcome to take this with you. And you can certainly as well visit our website, maltsmuseum.org, and see more about what's happening at the museum. I'd be more than happy to take any questions about the Pope exhibition or about the museum in general. Anything you'd like to ask? Yes? This is the last stop for this exhibition. It'll go back to rest at Xavier University, and actually there is discussion, and they're working towards having this exhibition find its permanent home at the new Museum of the Jewish People, the History of the Jewish People in Warsaw. That museum will open quite soon, and so it's no longer available for tour, but hopefully it will be available in the world for people to see again. Yes, anything else? Yes, sir.
Whether there was any further discussion in terms of interpretation of the factors that led to that, that could be extrapolated in terms of what we should be thinking about in terms of Jewish Catholic relationships that were modeled there in Baba Vichay.
No, we didn't really approach that subject in our programming, but it's very interesting to see or to hear from our Polish Jewish members that come through the museum who say, well, you know, There's anti-Semitism today. You know, it's in our neighborhoods today. There's always anti-Semitism. But my experience as a child in my hometown in Poland, until things started to become, where the Nazis were leading thought and action, you know, I had good relationships in my town. So, it's quite possible that Baba Vichay was not that unique. People live together all of the time, as we do in this country, and they do all over the world, in a type of tension between all of us who are different and all of us who have different ways of thinking about things. And just look at your television set. We're having an election. You know? So we all live in communities that have tension between peoples. You know, the atrocities of the Nazis brought that kind of tension to an overwhelming boil that is not like nothing that has been seen in human history. But we all live with tension. But at the same time, our relationship with our neighbors is often much better than sort of the broader issue of how we treat each other. But that's certainly something that is worth discussing. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to ask about the museum or the exhibition?
Actually, it's a point of information. There was another exhibit which was touring a few years ago about the relationship with the Franciscans.
Oh. During the war. I don't remember seeing that recently, so it may have, disappeared from the scene for a while. The other thing that a lot of our visitors are taking away from this exhibition, and many of the staff as well, is the deprivations of the Polish people under Nazi occupation. And the period that where young Wojtyła is in school in Krakow when the war breaks out, or when Poland is invaded by the Nazis, the university is closed. He, like all Polish citizens, are working in the mines, and he's going to school clandestinely, underground. And that's a story. We all have our own stories about what happens to people in times of war and deprivation. And the story of the deprivations of the Polish people is a real eye-opener for a lot of folks who come to our museum. Those pictures of Wojtyła in the mine, with his little pickaxe, knowing that he's going to school underground at night, and studying, of all things, religion, faith, understanding between one another, faith tradition, is quite an eye-opening memory that we sometimes forget. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Does the museum show films of survivors and rescuers?
Yes. Yes, we do. We have quite a number of survivors who are filmed and tell their story in the museum. We have a number of survivors that work with our youth and tell their story in person to many of our young people. And actually, we've we have a couple of liberators who are on film as well, and I did a program about a year ago with survivors and liberators together, which was quite an experience.
In Rochester this past year, we had four films on rescuers, Irene Sandler, Lord's Ghetto.
Yeah.
And that one was a new filmmaker from Canada, first time shown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we do quite a number of things. We work with our survivor community, and we do show documentary. Almost all the films that we show are documentary, except we showed Exodus on the 60th anniversary of Israel. It's 3.5 hours long. We showed it 3 times in the day, but we did give you popcorn, so that worked out pretty well. Anything else? Thank you all for being here this afternoon. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.